So this chapter 6 is entitled Dhyana Yoga. This is the chapter in which Lord Krishna is going to describe the process of Dhyana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga process. Initially, having spoken about how even in Ashtanga Yoga or Dhyana Yoga, it is necessary to continue to perform Nishkama Karma or selfless work, that is, work that is performed without attachment to the fruits. Such Nishkama Karma must be performed even in the process of Ashtanga Yoga. One should not give up the process. And eventually, when one reaches the highest platform, the Yoga Rudha platform, then eventually one may give up such prescribed duties, having attained. As we have discussed in the earlier sessions, ultimately all these different forms of yoga are meant for attaining liberation from material existence. In the sixth chapter specifically, Lord Krishna is going to speak about how liberation can be attained by the process of Ashtanga Yoga, the Yoga Arurukshya stage and the Yoga Arudha stage are respectively the beginning stage and the very advanced stage of yoga. Krishna is now going to describe in texts 7 to 9 the mental condition or the situation of a person on the Yoga Rudha platform. Before that, in texts 5 and 6, he has introduced the subject. He has talked about how important it is to control the mind. We discussed last Saturday that the mind is like an instrument. Any instrument can be used for any purpose. But an instrument should be rightly used for the right purpose in the right way. Then it will be beneficial for all. Similarly, the mind must be used. It should not be used for sense gratification. The mind should be used to uplift one's spirituality to oneself. Therefore, last time we saw, Lord Krishna had said, Uddhared Atmanatmanam. Uddhar. So once the mind should be used to deliver us, and not for the sake of entanglement. Na atmanam avasadayet. It is not meant for degrading the consciousness. And further Lord Krishna explained, Atmaiva hyatmano bandhu, Atmaiva ripuratman can be one's friend, or the mind can be one's enemy. In what condition is the mind a friend, and in what condition is the mind one's enemy? In the next verse, text 6, Lord Krishna had explained this very important point. Bandhuratma atmanastasya yenatmaiva atmanajitah anatmanastu shatrutve vartetatmaiva shatruvat. He explained that when one is able to control the mind, then the mind is one's best friend. If one is not able to control one's mind, then the mind is one's greatest enemy. When does the mind become one's friend? When the mind is used for service to the Supreme Lord. When does the mind become our greatest enemy? When we use it for sense gratification. We saw also last time, what does it mean to be an enemy? An enemy is one who harms our interest. A very great enemy is considered generally to be one who will kill us. Sometimes when enmity increases between two people, and it reaches the point when one kills the other, then we know that really the enmity has reached very high proportions. So in this world, high enmity is considered in terms of how much you can damage the other person. But the mind is the greatest enemy when engaged in sense gratification, because not only has it killed or destroyed our body one time, but it is destroying our body life after life. for billions and billions of lives that we have taken in this material world, each time we have accepted a material body, and each time, because the mind is not controlled, the mind is engaged in sense gratification, we die, only to take birth again. Had the mind not been involved in sense gratification, had the mind been involved with Krishna consciousness, we would not have had to take birth and then die again. So therefore, the uncontrolled mind, or the mind that is absorbed in sense gratification, is our greatest enemy, because it steals from us the greatest happiness that is our birthright. And on the contrary, it puts us into the greatest suffering, gives us material bodies and destroys these bodies one after the other for millions of births. However, when one takes to the process of yoga, which means to link with the Supreme Lord, one performs devotional service to the Lord, then gradually the mind starts getting purified. One starts climbing the ladder of yoga. And eventually, by repeated practice, one achieves the highest stage, which is yoga arudha. And what is the condition of one in this situation? What is the state of mind of such a person? This is going to be described from in text 7 to 9. So kindly chant text 7 after me. Jitātmanah prashāntasya paramātmā samāhitah śītoṣṇa sukha-dukkheṣu tathāmānāpamānayoh jitātmanah prashāntasya paramātmā samāhitah śītoṣṇa sukha-dukkheṣu tathāmānāpamānayoh. Translation by Śrīla Prabhupāda. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Kindly repeat. In other words, yoga is a matter of vision, drishti. It's a matter of how we see things. What kind of spectacles do we wear? That's what yoga is all about. Now somebody will say, is this a lecture on yoga or on ophthalmology? Yes, it is a lecture on spiritual ophthalmology. Ophthalmology means the science of taking care of the eyes. But here it's a question of developing spiritual eyes. Everything ultimately is a matter of vision. How you see things. You see a glass as half full, you see a glass as half empty. When your mind is happy and peaceful, everything around you seems so wonderful and beautiful. When your mind is distressed, even though you are in the most beautiful environment, everything seems without any purpose and meaning. So the yogi, real yogi, is not one who develops the power or the ability to touch his toes to his nose, or knows how to stand on it. That is not really what a yogi is. A yogi is one who develops the kind of vision that is mentioned here. That vision comes about because he has been able to control his mind. Jitat manaha. When one controls one's mind, what happens? Prashantasya. Prakrishta rupena shanti. Prakrishta rupena shanta iti prashanta. One who has attained real, genuine shanti or peace of mind, he is called Prashantatma. Sudhurlabha Prashantatma Kotishva Api Mahamune. It's only a devotee of the Lord who can ultimately be peaceful and happy All others, whether they are Ashtanga yogis or Karma yogis, whatever kind of yogis, they will never be able to attain complete tranquility of mind. All other yogic processes are meant for purification. But that purification is not complete. It is not total. It does not destroy the seeds of the enjoyment. The mind is compared to a lake or to some pure water. The yogic process, whether I should get the mud to settle down. But when there is some agitation of a stick, then the mud comes up and makes the water muddy again. So our mind, through which our consciousness is being reflected, when it is in Krishna consciousness, it is pure. When it is in sense gratification, it is muddy. By the process of Ashtanga Yoga, for example, we make the mind settle down. The mud slowly comes to the bottom, but it's still there. And eventually when there is agitation from the sense objects, again the mind becomes disturbed, becomes attracted to the things of this world. Yatato yapi kaunteya purushasya vipaschitaha indriyani pramathini haranti prasabham manaha. O Arjuna, the senses, the mind are so strong that they pull away the mind of even a person who is endeavoring for sense control with discrimination. That is how powerful the mind is. So all these different processes of yoga, they pull away the mind at the slightest provocation. But bhakti yoga is the path where we attain real peace, prashantatma. So the mind is engaged in Krishna's service, it becomes peaceful, and in that peaceful situation, samahitaha, we are able to see the Lord within the heart. We are able to meet the Lord in the heart. We have seen last time that the mind is the instrument by which we can see the Lord. When the instrument is faulty, then the vision is faulty. Like some of us are wearing spectacles. If there's a lot of dust on the spectacles, then. But when we clean, then the vision becomes clearer. So when the mind is full of sense gratification and desires for sense gratification, then we are not able to see Krishna in the heart. Krishna is there, but we are not able to see Him. He remains hidden. But when the mind becomes pure, then what is already in the heart easily becomes visible. But not with these eyes, with the eyes of the soul. The eyes of the soul are now covered over with the mud of the desires for sense gratification. So therefore they obstruct the development or the manifesting of the real spiritual eyes. In this way we are not able to see the Supreme Lord within our heart. So yoga really means to wear spiritual spectacles, to purify the vision by which we can shake hands with the Supreme Lord, by which we can come in contact. From the Lord's side, this contact is there, but we have broken the contact from our side because of getting involved in sense gratification. The devotee of the Lord, for him it's not at all difficult, because in every aspect, in every situation in life, he just sees the Supreme Lord. Rather, he sees the expansion of the Lord's energies. Later on in this chapter, towards the end, Lord Krishna is going to say, Sarva bhutastham atmanam, sarva bhutani chatmani, ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha. He will say that a person who has really realized what yoga is, he sees everything in me and he sees me in everything. Sarva bhutani chatmani, sarva bhutastham atmani. So he sees me in everything, he sees everything in me. Yukta iti uchyate yogi. So such a person is called a yogi. So very clearly Krishna has defined here, a yogi means one who can see Krishna everywhere, who can see Krishna's presence everywhere, who can see Krishna's energy everywhere, who sees Krishna in everything. But seeing Krishna in everything doesn't mean that we think Krishna is everything in a Mayavadi way. The Mayavadis think that everything is God. You are God, I am God. Brahma Satya Chatat Mithya. But not that kind of vision. The devotee understands that nothing is separate from Krishna. Everything is connected to Krishna. The act of seeing something separate from Krishna is called Maya. This material world is an energy of Krishna. Everything is an energy of Krishna. When we do something, we should see the connection to Krishna. One time, one person, just in order to challenge, he was asking, well, what if I drink liquor and see that as Krishna's energy? So fine, yes, but can you? Can you really see that as Krishna's energy? It's not a matter of theoretically saying it. And if you really see it as Krishna's energy, then you will not take so much trouble to just go there. Then what is the difference between liquor and water and milk? Then you should be equal under all circumstances. You should not hanker only for liquor. You should be satisfied when the liquor is denied and fruit juice is given to you. Then you should not be upset about it. And by drinking it, are you really going to think of Krishna? Are you going to really see the connection to Krishna? So people may say for the sake of arguing many things. But yoga is not just a matter of arguments, it's a matter of realization. So one must develop this purity of vision by seeing the connection to Krishna. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashyami tasyaham na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati. So Lord Krishna says, for one who has reached me or attained to me, he is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. That is the purport of Paramatma Samahita. That when the mind is controlled by being focused on Krishna, one becomes peaceful, one sees the connection to Krishna, and then automatically everything becomes Krishna-maya. Everything becomes Krishnaized. Krishna's energy and nothing but Krishna's energy. One time, Srila Prabhupada was walking, he was going, I think it was in Australia, and as he was sitting in the car, he was looking around as the car was moving, and people were walking here and there on the streets, and then his disciple was with some small drops of tears coming in his eyes, and he asked him, Prabhupada, what is the matter? And then he pointed to the people in the street who seemed to be happily walking here and there, absorbed in their own affairs, and he said, just see how these people are suffering. So the devotee was thinking that they don't look like they're suffering. And they look quite happy walking on this road, and they're chatting with their friends and doing whatever they're doing. But Prabhupada could understand the false nature of this real happiness, because they were not seeing things in connection to Krishna. Their sense of happiness was something separate from Krishna. One time Prabhupada also said that if it's a slum, a very dirty place, filthy place, but if one is seeing Krishna, that is Vaikuntha. It is the most beautiful place. In other words, when we are based on the platform of the body, we see everything in terms of sense gratification. The mind decides pleasant, unpleasant, favorable, unfavorable, good, bad. And whatever appeals to our senses, whatever is favorable for gratifying them, we think is favorable or pleasant or good. In this way, the living entity is caught in the cycle of duality. But the spiritualist, the real yogi, is situated on the platform of the soul, of Krishna consciousness. And the real yogi sees everything in connection to Krishna, so everything is absolute, all good. Everything comes from Krishna, nothing can be separated from Krishna. All experiences, good, bad, happiness, distress, everything is being sent by Krishna. Shitoshna sukhadukheshu tatha mana apamana yoho. Because the real yogi, the devotee, sees everything as being sent by Krishna, as being part of Krishna's energy, he doesn't or she doesn't try to fight and struggle for happiness and distress. If happiness comes of its own accord, well and good. If distress comes of its own accord, well and good. Both are gifts of Krishna. Honor comes, it's a gift of Krishna. Dishonor comes, it's also a gift of Krishna. So the devotee's equanimity of mind is because he sees everything's connection to Krishna. He sees everything as coming from the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. That is how one can develop this consciousness. So having described the first situation of the person who has reached a high platform in the path of yoga, Krishna will now continue this description further to elaborate what is the state of mind of a person who has reached the Yoga Rudha platform. Text 8. Jnana Vijnana Triptatma Kutastho Vijitendriyah Yukta Ityuchyate Yogi Samaloshtashma Kanchanah. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. So here is a further advancement. When one has reached the Yoga Rudra platform, one sees pain and pleasure, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor as the same. When one becomes a little more advanced, even on that Yoga Rudra platform, then one sees stones, pebbles, gold as the same. So gold also has no value. It's all the same as stones. Actually, what is gold? It's just some metal, isn't it? It's found on the earth. What is the difference between gold and some stone? It's just that gold has some properties that make it very attractive to people, to human beings. That's all. Is an animal attracted to gold? Animal cannot understand the value of gold. So it's all in our mind. We think something is very valuable, we think something has no value, and these conceptions keep changing. Today what is considered valuable is not considered valuable tomorrow. So what is the real thing of value? These things of the world are perishable, they have no value. You know the story of Sanatan Goswami, it's one of the favorite stories of the devotees, when he was in Vrindavan and this rich man came to him for some blessings. Because he had heard that Sanatan Goswami owned a Chintamani. And Chintamani is one, a Parasmani, which whatever you touch, it becomes gold. So he approached this sadhu, Sanatan Goswami, and begged him, that I am a businessman, and I heard that you have a Parasmani, so please give me that, because as a sadhu, as a Babaji in Vrindavan, what use do you have for such a thing? And Sanatan Goswami said, no problem, you can have it. So where is it? It's right there in that garbage can. What? Garbage can? A Parasmani? Then he thought, anyway, what difference does it make? So long as I get the Parasmani, it's all right. Wherever he may have kept it. So he took that Parasmani and he went mad, making everything into gold. And he had so much gold, he didn't know what to do. Everywhere was gold, his glasses, his plates, his toilet, everything was gold. Gold, 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 gold everywhere. But gold cannot make you happy. So finally, because of a disturbed mind, he was still thinking, I want more, I want more, I want more. That's the nature of things in this world. Whatever you have, you're never satisfied. You want more. And that was what Vamandev said to Bali Maharaj. That even if one whose mind is not controlled, still want more. Therefore, I am satisfied with 3 steps of land. So then, as he was thinking, this businessman thought, yes, this sadhu, he gave me this Parasmani and it was lying in a garbage can. He had thrown it away, discarded it. That means this sadhu must be having something more valuable than the Parasmani. As if he did not have enough gold and enough wealth, what more could he want? But such is the nature of greed in this world, that he wanted more and more. So he went back to Sanatan Goswami, being dissatisfied. And he said, I took the Chintamani from you, but then I started thinking, that you obviously must have something more precious. That is why you have thrown it away. You are a Babaji, so please give me what you have. So he said, certainly, I will give you. But you have to pay a price for it. What is that? The price is that this Parasmani that you have taken from me, you must throw it in the Jamuna. What? Throw it in the Jamuna? So yes, only then you can get this other money that I have. So his heart was pulled. He didn't understand what to do to throw this Paras money. It was real torture for him. For a materialist to be parted from his wealth is extremely difficult, great torture. So then anyway he decided that I'm going to get something much more valuable, and after all he was sadhu, he won't lie to me, he won't cheat me. So with a very heavy heart he went and he just somehow managed Paras money in the Jamuna with great difficulty. And with a very nervous heart he came back to Sanatan Goswami and said, Babaji, I have thrown now. Please give me the money. So Sanatan Goswami said, joyfully I shall give you the money, or the money, or the stone. So he said, here it is. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Look, Babaji, I have already thrown it in the river. Please don't play the fool with me like this. I have already thrown it. Yes, but I am not fooling you. This is the fact. I am giving you the real priceless jewel. So it took a while for Sanatan Goswami to explain to this man, finally. So the point is that what is valuable and what is not valuable? Even the most valuable things in this world, seen from the point of view of Krishna consciousness, are absolutely insignificant. Sanatan Goswami was the minister of the Nawab Hussain Shah of Bengal. He was fabulously wealthy. He had everything, even as a young man. But still he gave up everything. Bharat Maharaj also, it is described in the Bhagavatam, that he gave up all his wealth, considering it as absolutely insignificant. He just walked away. And all the great sages, who were kings, the Rajarishis, they have trod this path. They lived amidst opulence and great wealth, but because they had been trained in the Vedic culture right from their childhood, in the principle of renunciation and of seeing things properly in relationship to God, so when the time came for them to renounce, they were able to do it easily. The importance of training ourselves to be detached, accept things as they come by providence. So therefore Krishna explains, yes, sama, loshtra, ashma, kanchanaha. Kanchana means gold, ashma or loshtra means pebbles and stones. So this is one of the tests of an equal mind, how you see gold and stone. Chanakya Pandit, the great moralist, the great economist, the great political scientist, you may call him so many things. So he has also defined what real vision should be. It's a very famous shloka which Prabhupada quoted many, many times. Matrivat paradareshu paradravyeshu loshtravat Atmavat sarvabhuteshu yaha pashyati sa panditaha. Who is a pandit or who is a real learned person? Yaha pashyati. Pashyati means to see. One who sees things in a certain way. So see, Chanakya also is defining knowledge in terms of seeing things, in terms of vision. He is not describing knowledge in terms of whether we know Sanskrit, whether we have BA, MA, PhD. He is not describing knowledge in terms of how one can mesmerize the audiences by very learned lectures or writing big books. No. Pashyati. He is saying seeing. One who sees things in a certain way. So what is his vision of a person who is a real pandit, a knowledgeable person? Matrivat paradareshu. Very simple. He brings down knowledge to the very ordinary everyday level. Knowledge, a really knowledgeable person must be able to translate that knowledge into his everyday actions. Then a person is really knowledgeable. Because when the knowledge translates into vijnana, jnana becomes vijnana, that knowledge, book knowledge becomes experienced knowledge, then one can act in accordance with that. Jnana vijnana triptatma. So the very beginning of this verse is jnana and vijnana. So then one's actions reflect one's state of knowledge. It is not enough to have book knowledge and then act contrary to that knowledge. So Chanakya Pandit says, the first symptom of learning is that one sees every man's wife as one's mother. Matruvat paradareshu. Para means another's. Dareshu means wife. So when one sees other ladies who are other men's wives as one's mother, then one is considered a pandit. It's a matter of seeing. But a beginning to seeing is at least calling. So Prabhupada established a system that in ISKCON, the men would address the ladies as Mataji. And Prabhupada mentioned, it is better to call Mataji than the Indian custom of calling people as Behenji. He said, this Behenji, your sister, doesn't mean anything. But Mataji is a term of respect. And Prabhupada emphasized that one should address even a younger lady as a Mataji. It's not that only when one is older than you that you should address her as Mataji. It's a term of respect. One time in New Delhi, I happened to get into a bus, and the bus was starting and some lady was there, and she was getting in very slowly, and we had 1 foot up and 1 foot down, so I told her, Mataji, jaldi kijiye, please quickly enter. So she turned around very upset, and she said, do I look like old enough to be your mother? Really angry. And I had to beg forgiveness. I said, no, I did not mean in that way, but it is just our custom. We just say like that. So the point is that we see this vision gives us some purity. Because as you know, in this world, the relation between man and woman is the cause of the greatest problems in this world. Prabhupada said many times, man alone is wonderful. Woman alone, wonderful. Man, woman together causes problems. So therefore, if one wants to advance in spiritual life, then one must have this purity of vision. And since this is the greatest binding force in this world, the attraction between man and woman, punsam mithunistriyam bhavam etaha. So therefore, one of the symptoms of a self-realized soul who has controlled mind is to see others. And conversely, every lady must see every other man, apart from her husband, as one son. And that is the way in which both the ladies and the men can protect themselves. And this will lead a very pure life. And this was very necessary even in the Vedic culture, because you see, the brahmacharya sannyasis would go for madhukari, they would go for begging door to door for their food. They would not cook. And when they went to get alms, many times the ladies were alone in the house because the men had gone to the fields or they had gone for that business or whatever. So such things were especially important, and today also they are important. All the people think this to be very odd. Nowadays if you call somebody who is not acquainted with this terminology as Mataji, or then it becomes, they think it's very funny, it's very strange. But this culture is very important. It keeps the purity, it keeps relationships very nice and wonderful, keeps everything very spiritual, it keeps people's vision very nice. Otherwise, everything becomes polluted. In a polluted atmosphere, everything becomes spoilt. Krishna consciousness is not possible. Sometimes people accuse us of being fanatic. We are keeping the ladies separately, the gents separately. So there is no discrimination. But it is just a matter of caution to preserve purity. It is meant so that the focus will remain on Krishna. Ultimately, being a male or a female conception, it is just that somebody has a male body, somebody has a female body. But as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned, there is no difference. All can become devotees of Krishna. In order to keep the focus very clearly on the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, and not to allow to be distracted by various other things, we do such things. It is not to be considered as discrimination. Then the next thing that Chanakya Pandit explains is, Paradravyeshu Loshtravat. Para, para means another's. Dravya, dravya is wealth. Loshtravat, loshtra means pebbles. So he says the same thing that Krishna says in this verse. Para dravyeshu loshtravat. One should see other people's wealth like stones on the street. One may walk on the street, one will see so many pebbles lying there. But does one go up and put up sackfuls of stones and bring it home and keep it in a safe deposit locker? No, we don't. Because what is the value of that stone? Similarly, if somebody has lakhs of rupees, crores of rupees and gold and jewels and big car and big house, why should we envy that person? Such envy only leads to our own downfall. It leads to loss of peace of mind. The one who envies suffers, not the one who is being envied. The person who is being envied doesn't even probably realize that we are envying him. And no one in this world is free from this envy. Someone may be a billionaire, but there's always someone who is billionaire plus one. Or even if he's billionaire, he wants something more. There's always something or someone that is a cause of envy for all. And the whole nature of this material world, the principle of competition in this material world, is based upon how one can get more than what the other has. One is always aiming for what other people have. One wants to grab the property of other people. This is the way on which everything proceeds. Those of you who are businessmen, you also know, so much competition in business. You're struggling for the same set of people, customers. Sometimes your competitor gets your clients, sometimes you get back your clients. This is the nature of this world. Ultimately, whatever wealth we are going to get in this world is dependent on our destiny. Every customer is sent to a businessman by Krishna. Every patient is sent to a doctor by Krishna. Every rupee that we earn is sent to us by Krishna. So why should one worry? Why should one worry that one should serve extra, one should work so hard that one doesn't have time for one's Krishna consciousness? One should devote sufficient time to Krishna consciousness and know fully well that how much we have in life, the wealth that we own, will automatically be given by Krishna. And in this way, one should never envy other people for their wealth. This is the second important thing about developing vision. Paradhaveshu loshtavat. Atmavat sarvabhuteshu. That's the third thing. Sarvabhuteshu means all the living entities. Atmavat. Atma means oneself. So one should see other living entities like oneself. What are the things we want for oneself, for ourselves? Don't we want to be happy? We want other people to be happy also. Don't we want ourselves to be well fed? Others should be well fed. Don't we want to be Krishna conscious? Others should be Krishna conscious. Do we like it when others blame us or criticize us? Then we should not criticize and blame others. In this way, a very, very, very sublime and simple rule of human conduct is being explained here by Chanakya Pandit. It's not high philosophy. But only a person who has understood the highest philosophy can actually act like this. No one else can act genuinely in this way. Are all living beings as good as yourself? This is a very deep thing actually. It means that you will never harm any other living being. One time when Srila Prabhupada was commenting on this verse, which he quoted many, many times in his lectures. This is perhaps one verse of Chanakya Pandit that Prabhupada has quoted more often than any other of his verses. And in one particular explanation of this Atmavat Sarvabhuteshu, Srila Prabhupada said, it means all living entities. So why do you slaughter animals and eat them? So a person who considers all living beings as good as himself will not unnecessarily kill animals for the sake of satisfying his tongue. So in this way, Chanakya Pandit has outlined here, Yah Pashyati Sa Panditaha. One who develops this vision, such a person is a Pandit. So this is a standard of real education. It is a standard for formula of civilized behavior. These are the three items of human culture. Very simple. If human culture just does these three things, then this can be a divine place. It is a perfect atmosphere in which Krishna consciousness can be injected and people can all become pure lovers of God. So here also Krishna is explaining that a person who by jnana and vijnana, who becomes triptatma, his mind becomes satisfied as explained earlier, he becomes kutasthaha. Kutasthaha means who is fixed in the spiritual consciousness, who is unshakable. Vijitendriyaha, vijita indriyaha, who has conquered his senses because he has controlled his mind. Last time we were given the analogy of the chariot. The reins of the horse are the mind and the horses are the senses. So when the reins are held tight, the horses are also held tight. So when the mind is controlled, the senses are controlled. Therefore, vijitendriya yukta ityuchyate yogi samaloshtashma kanchanaha. In this condition, one sees pebbles, stones, and gold as the same. Furthermore, in the next verse, Lord Krishna is going to talk about an even higher state of vision on the Yoga Ruda platform. What it means to see everything equally. That we will discuss next time. So now there will be darshan. After that, there will be question answers and then prasadam. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. From yesterday, a very special one month has begun. It is the month of Kartik. In the month of Kartik, all devotees of Lord Krishna, they offer beautiful lamps to Krishna, and especially this is the month of Damodar, when the Damodar Leela of the Lord is remembered. Here you see Mother Yashoda is binding Krishna to the grinding mortar. So we will chant a particular prayer. We will give you the song books. We chant a prayer called a Damodar Ashtakam. So we will chant that, and after we finish the chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, then you may please come up and offer the lamps to Krishna and Mother Yashoda and also to the deities. And in this month, to do devotional service like this, like offering lamps and other things, is very, very potent.
As a transformation of knowledge into actions, what is the difference between Jnana and Vijnana, and what is revealed knowledge?
Jnana is theoretical knowledge. Vijnana is experienced knowledge. When one has experience of something, then one's actions will also reflect that knowledge. When the knowledge is not experienced, then there will be a difference between our actions and our knowledge, or our words. Therefore, the test of knowledge is in the actions. This is the difference between Jnana and Vijnana. And that is why one understands by simple things what is the level of realization of spiritual knowledge. Scriptures or through great saintly people, what knowledge is revealed for us to understand what is available knowledge. Knowledge is limitless. Veda is unlimited. But a portion of that unlimited knowledge is manifested through the Vedas, through the scriptures, what we know as the Vedas. And a portion of that is available to us today as Srimad Bhagavatam Gita. And a portion of that Bhagavatam Gita we are somewhat understanding. So revealed knowledge means that knowledge which is revealed by Krishna for us. It is not that he is revealing the entirety of knowledge. That is not possible for us to understand. Scriptures. You find this phrase many times. Revealed scriptures. In scriptures that are revealed by Krishna. Because spiritual knowledge is a matter of revelation. It is not a matter of research. That I will tinker in some laboratory and get some answers. Who is God? Where does God reside? It's a matter of revelation from a higher source. The highest source is God. So Shastra is a Paurusheya. It is of divine origin. Spiritual truths come from the top to the bottom. Material truths go from the bottom to the top. By research they want to find out more and more, and then they expand their knowledge. But spiritual knowledge is taken as given from a higher authority. So that is called revealed knowledge. Any other questions?
Realized knowledge. Is it knowledge or realized knowledge?
The question is, when one hears from an authorized source, is that knowledge realized knowledge or just simply knowledge? It depends for whom. If the person speaking is realized, it is realized knowledge. If the person receiving is realized, that may be realized knowledge. For example, we are talking about how one should see Krishna in everything, and how Krishna is not being separate from anything. The speaker may not have that understanding, or may have that understanding. Similarly with the receiver. But there may be a pure devotee in the audience who may actually understand what this means. Maybe the speaker also doesn't really understand. or maybe vice versa, or maybe anything. So it depends on the ability of the person who is receiving or speaking.
We have heard that Prabhupada telling this Shastra is what I have given is knowledge. So what
yes, that is in a general sense. That is in a general sense. That it is knowledge means it is tattva, spiritual truths. But that knowledge has to be assimilated by us now. Just like somebody gives us food. But we have to eat it and we have to digest it for it to become really valuable to us. Simply food can. Similarly, Prabhupada is given knowledge, but that knowledge we have to digest, assimilate by studying, by hearing, by chanting, by serving. Then that truth will become realized in our hearts. So when Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo vepti tattvataha tattva deham punarjanmanaiti maameti suvarshana, he says that one who understands in truth the divine nature of my appearance and activities in this world will not upon leaving his body take birth again, but rather he will come to me, to my abode. So why doesn't Krishna just say vetti? No, to know. Why does he say vetti tattvataha? In truth, that means he says you must actually experience it also. Not just simply know, theoretically. So somebody may theoretically know, yes, Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. His appearance is totally spiritual, fine. So it is good, at least he knows that. But now that has to be realized. What is the meaning of realized knowledge? Yo mam evam asammoodho janati purushottamam sa sarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. In the 15th chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna explains, if you really know Krishna, without doubt, what is the meaning? Yo mam evam asammoodho janati. So those who know me, janati, asammoodho, means without doubt. Sa sarvavit, such a person, Arjuna, knows everything. And how does he behave? Bhajati mam, sarvabhavena bharata. He worships me with all his heart. So if somebody says, I know Krishna, that is knowledge. But I know Krishna in truth, or I have realized Krishna, that means he is acting on the platform of that knowledge. That means he is totally engaged in devotional service to Krishna. So, sarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena. That should be the test. So, if one really understands janma karma chame divyam, that Krishna's birth and appearance and pastimes are divine, then one should actually be engaged in devotional service to Krishna. That is the test. Constantly engaged.
So it seems for realization there are 4 or 5 means. One is reading, hearing from an authorized source, chanting, worshipping, serving the Lord, serving the devotees. So of all these, which is the best? And according to the verse we said, just now we have told, that ultimately he is bhajat, he is engaged in the worship. So it seems worship serving the Lord becomes the highest when he completely realizes. So how does Shravanam play a part in it? Where does it stay in Kali Yuga?
The word bhaja, Prabhupada explains in the purports in Bhagavad Gita, is a very deep word. Bhaja means not just worship in as aradhana or just as puja, but worship means totally serving the Lord in every way. The Lord is comprehensive. He is not just Krishna, one person. Krishna means Krishna along with his name, Krishna along with his abode, Krishna along with his paraphernalia like the flute, Krishna along with his devotees, Krishna along with his glories, his qualities, his instructions, his scriptures, his deity, everything is Krishna. So when we say worshipping Krishna, it means worshipping his name, chanting his name. How do you worship the name? By chanting. So that bhaja, that service, takes on different forms according to that aspect of Krishna that you are serving. How do you serve Krishna as a deity? In so many ways, like puja and so on, take darshan, offer foodstuffs, decorate the deity. How do you serve the holy name? By chanting and hearing. How do you serve the scriptures? By reading, hearing, reciting. How do you serve the devotees? In so many ways, mainly by serving them. and many, many other ways. So like this, all is service to Krishna. And all involves ultimately faithfully acting on this principle of Krishna consciousness. By doing this, automatically everything will be revealed to us within the heart. All truths will be revealed.
And the point of being doubtless, when one is ignorant, he feels he is doubtless. I have read books, now Krishna is the Supreme Personality. Now what is the doubt further? Because in some amount of ignorance, level of so much ignorance is there, so he thinks I don't have any more doubts. So here the point is, what is the depth of doubtlessness?
It's the in-between people who are always in difficulty. Ignorance is bliss, they say. When somebody doesn't really know anything, he thinks he knows everything. But when he starts knowing, then he starts realizing, my God, so much there is to know. And then finally, when he realizes everything, he becomes free from doubt. But the two kinds of doubt are different. The freedom from doubts, both these are different. The first kind of freedom from doubt is out of ignorance. The second kind of freedom from doubt is because of genuine understanding, genuine realization of knowledge. Just like the atheist doesn't know that Krishna is God. Mother Yashoda doesn't know that Krishna is God. Both don't know that Krishna is God. But can you compare them? They're different categories. The atheist first has to understand what is the absolute truth, body, soul, who is God. Then gradually over many, many lifetimes he will come to Krishna consciousness. Then start practicing, then become a pure devotee. Then he may attain Vrindavan. So the in-between person has to go through this journey. So we are all in that journey. Alright, so thank you very much. Now please take prasadam.